Thank you, Renee. It's good to be here with you all for a bit. I've been kind of busy in the work of my hands for the last few weeks. I've been a little scarce. Coming back here for Sunday, and then we're gone for a little bit for some family travel. So I'm glad that the Sunday I'm here, I get to think about Scripture with you some. We've been working through the lectionary this summer, right? Instead of working through one book or one passage as we do during the regular year, we've just been looking at what the rest of our brothers and sisters are reading on this Sunday. And when I looked at the lectionary for this Sunday, this passage from 1 Samuel that we'll look at came out. So today's teaching is just going to be a very narrative time. I just wanted to spend time with this story. So I was going to kind of walk us through this story. There's going to be a few parts here. I'll start with the prelude. We'll start right with the verse itself, and then we'll move through what I read in this story of Samuel, the prophet, holy man, Samuel, and Saul, Israel's first king, and Yahweh, the God of Israel, and Israel herself. I read as a story of love, and then a first betrayal, and then a real shattering of a relationship, which then we see some things put back together again. So we'll work through this story together. Starting with the prelude, like a lot of films and movies, we start at the end these days. Then Samuel left for Ramah, and Saul went up to his home in Gibeah of Saul. And until the day Samuel died, he did not go to see Saul again, though Samuel mourned for him. And the Lord regretted that he had made Saul king over Israel. This is a moving picture to just drop in right there of a broken relationship. Even if you don't know this story, you're seeing something about these two men, Saul and Samuel, who had some relationship and now they don't. They never see each other again. Something profoundly broken there. And we get this tremendously strong language of the God of Israel having regret. Wow, that's heavy. And so it really, this dropping in at the end of the story, it raises a lot of questions. How did we get there? And where do we go from there? We've got a picture here right off the bat of a real tear in a social fabric. Something's broken in a community. So in order to look at how these tears happened and what God does with those tears with us, how God mends broken hearts in the context of community, I want to walk back through the story of love and the story of broken hearts. So this is really a story of a relationship triangle between Samuel and the God of Israel, between the God of Israel and Israel, and between Samuel and Israel. I want to look at this story and how the love grew and then how it fell. I should say there's things to learn along the way here about what godly leadership actually is. There's a lot to say here about what God wants for us from our leaders. I'm very tempted to just talk about that for a while. I think we have some need for that, but I'm just going to let that be. So I want to look at more local, maybe, concerns about what we do with broken relationships, but I'll just invite you to be thinking in your mind, what could we learn from these stories of kingship, of righteous leadership and broken leadership in the context of our own leaders and questions about government today? I'm not going to touch on that, but I'll just invite you to think about that. So part one. Faithful love. How did the love begin? So God's love story with Israel, around which this church is really based, of course, began a long time before this story in Samuel. You could say that God's love story with Israel began in Eden, in this amazing picture of love where God creates the world out of nothing. And not only God creates the world out of nothing, but creates a world that is abundant, that creates more. Eden is this picture of flourishing, of the greenery busting through the walls like we had back in Advent last year. It's just Eden, just love comes and comes and comes. There was no need for Eden. There was no need for the world, but God made it. It's a love without cause. It's a love without bounds. And God's love for Israel begins with Abraham and Sarah, of course, in a kind of type of Eden. You've got, in the same way that we didn't need the world, but we got it in Genesis and Eden, with Abraham and Sarah, they were at the end of a certain kind of chain of life with no children, and yet God gave them a child in Isaac. There's a birth there, a sort of a leaf in the desert for them, that then in the context of God's promise to Abraham grows just as much as Eden. There's this promise of proliferation, that from this one leaf we'll see a whole garden, from this one child, Isaac, we're going to see nations upon nations, innumerable. We'll see the whole world experience God's love. And so God's love story begins with Abraham and Sarah as a kind of, I would argue, as a kind of type of the Eden story. And then it continues. And then as we look in the scriptures over and over again here, we see what happens from there, right? We see that in that love story, Israel faces its greatest challenge to experiencing that abundance in Egypt, right? You see, what is more of a challenge to God's abundant love than cruel slavery, which is what they endured there in Egypt. So there's a sense that maybe this love story isn't going to turn out right. What happened to the abundance? We're now utterly enslaved. What happened? And God leaves them out, and we get this new instance of God's love. And we get God's law. The law becomes a kind of whole system of memory about how to remember God's love, right? The laws given to God's people after they escaped Egypt are a way to help them remember every day that abundance, that love. In the context of this week, this is the week of Juneteenth, right? This is the week we're coming into when we celebrate the very last, Texas was the very last state in the Union to outlaw slavery on June 18th or 19th? 19th, thank you. Why that came into my head. And so in a way, I think about God's law as trying to make every day Juneteenth in Israel, right? It's a way of saying everything you do, everything you eat, every way you order your life, remember that you were freed, right? That's what God's law does in that context. And so, of course, that setting up of that reminder of God's love also ends up making it all the more clear when Israel fails that relationship, and it happens time and time again, but God is faithful through that time. Great is thy faithfulness, right? It's that persistence of God's love towards Israel. And this is where Samuel comes in, right? Samuel comes in once that story is well underway of God's love with Israel. He comes into the story after Israel has escaped from slavery, after they've made it to their promised land, this land of milk and honey. Samuel comes in at a time of relative peace compared to other times Israel faces. And Samuel is a lifelong servant. He's from very, very little, right? He establishes this relationship with God that is as deep as committed. It's a piece of that relationship to Israel, right? And he becomes a leader of these people. Samuel, this holy man, becomes a leader of God's people through some tough times. They see the Ark of the Covenant stolen and they get it back. But I think a lot of what we see in the story of Samuel is a story of a holy man with a deep relationship to God, really finding his calling and his vocation as a leader there in Israel. The picture we get, I won't get into all the verses, you get this picture of him living there on Ramah, this hill where he's born and raised, and staying in communion with God, and people come to him for help and judgment on the issues that they need help with. We learn he begins to establish a kind of circuit. Every now and then he ventures out from Ramah, goes out in a dependable way. People come, bring their issues to him, he adjudicates. And he's in a kind of pattern, and he's got a good thing going. Israel's getting from him as a godly leader what they need as a godly leader. He's not a king. He doesn't have any ownership. He's not anointed. There's no contractual relationship between him and Israel. He's just there listening to God. They're coming to him, and he's selflessly adjudicating and helping them maintain their relationship to God and the law, helping them maintain their relationship to the roots of that abundant love. And it's a beautiful thing. And so we have these two love stories that have been going, right, of God with Israel, of Samuel with Israel. Things are going well. And then we get an initial kind of betrayal here. And what happens, as many of you know, is that the people decide, you know, actually, we'd like a king. And this is a big deal. This is really like Adam and Eve in the garden eating from that tree. They had a good thing going here, and now they want a king. They want a sovereign. They want to serve someone who doesn't just give freely, as God does and as Samuel did, but who gives in some sort of exchange. It's amazing that they would want this, but maybe we understand, right? They want a king is someone with whom you can have a contract. A king is someone who you actually, you know, they own something of you, but in return, you know that they owe you protection. It's something that they seem to want. Israel seems to want some surety about protection from neighbors and from aggressors. they want that kind of contractual surety that they don't see that they have with Samuel. And this is kind of a shock, right? Because the king establishes some ownership over you. Really, they're asking to give up some of what they earned by leaving Egypt. And this is a kind of shocking thing. And Samuel and God together try to dissuade them of this. They try to remind them, you know, you're moving away from abundance here. You're asking for a king. You're asking to take a step away from that order of abundance that you've been living in, that the law is meant to remind you about. And there's a longer passage I won't put up here where God and Samuel together kind of plead with them a little on this. Samuel told, in chapter 8, verse 10, 1 Samuel, Samuel told all the words of the Lord to the people who were asking for a king. He said, this is what the king who will reign over you is going to claim as his rights, right? The contractual nature of a king. He will, under his rights, take your sons and make them serve with his chariots and horses. Some he will assign to be commanders of thousands and commanders of fifties. Others he will command to plow the ground and reap his harvest. Still others he will command to make weapons of war. That's something on Father's Day, thinking about. Remember what this king is. This king's going to take your sons. He will take your daughters to be perfumers and cooks and bakers. He will take the best of your fields and vineyards and olive groves. He will take a tenth of your grain, your male and female servants, and the best of your cattle and donkeys. He will take for his own use. He will take a tenth of your flocks. When that comes, God and Samuel are warning the people, you will cry out for relief from this king you have chosen, but the Lord will not answer you in that day. But the people refuse to listen. No, we want a king over us. Then we'll be like other nations, with a king to lead us and go out before us and fight our battles. When Samuel heard all the people have said, he repeated it before the Lord. And the Lord answered, listen to them, give them a king. And Samuel said to the Israelites, everyone go back to your own town. So God and Samuel are kind of together. The love, the relationship is actually still whole. There's been a kind of introduction of a fracture here, but God and Samuel's words together, pleading out of love, you sure you want to do this? They say yes. God and Samuel don't walk away. They stay with him, right? They go and find Saul. They anoint this first king. And on the eve of Saul's taking the throne, Samuel comes and makes this speech. I want to look at a little bit of this. Samuel says, and at this point, we don't read in the scriptures that Samuel is speaking with God's words here, as we did before. This is Samuel's words. Here I stand. Testify against me in the presence of the Lord and his anointed, his new anointed Saul. Whose ox have I taken? Whose donkey have I taken? Whom have I cheated? Who am I have oppressed? From whose hand have I accepted a bribe to make me shut my eyes? If I've done any of these things, I'll make it right. You've not cheated or oppressed us, they replied. You've not taken anything from anyone's hand. And Samuel said to them, the Lord is witness against you, and also his anointed is witness to this day, that you've not found anything in my hand. He is witness, they said. So you hear him on the eve of them taking a king who's going to start taking things from his hand, a king who is a kind of leader that is by definition not selfless. It is contractual. He's reminding them of the selfless nature of his leadership. And I hear this as really his appeal to how, you know, I'm feeling some brokenness here. I don't deserve this. I'm feeling like you broke something in my relationship with you. And, you know, he really was a godly leader. Not a godly leader in, as how some of we hear people described as godly leaders today. A godly leader in his selflessness in that way, in his being a type of God's love to the people. And he seems to have a need for them to bear witness to what they're doing here, to that brokenness. And he goes on to even also point to how they're also breaking their relationship to God in this. And this feels right to me. It feels like Samuel doing it more on his own, not as much with God, but it feels right. When a relationship is broken, don't we want to have that acknowledged? Aren't we there with the person? And maybe it's really hard and they can't really hear, or maybe we wish they would come in here and they won't come here. But when a relationship is broken, don't we want that named in that way? And then the people said to Samuel, pray to the Lord your God so that we will not die. For now we've added to all our other sins the evil of asking for a king. So he sets the brokenness out there on the eve of Saul's ascendance. And they see it. They see. Things are still going to go forward. Saul's still going to be king. But what's key here is that Samuel seems to soften when the brokenness is named and when he reminds them of God's own faithfulness to them. He softens and he turns in his farewell speech that started with this, you know, sort of making sure everyone saw that he'd been a good leader. He turned to this. Same speech. Don't be afraid. After they're afraid for what they've realized they've done. You have done all this evil, yet do not turn away from the Lord, but serve the Lord with all your heart. Don't turn away after useless idols. They can do you no good, nor can they rescue you because they're useless. For the sake of his great name, the Lord will not reject his people, because the Lord was pleased to make you his own. As for me, far be it from me that I should sin against the Lord by failing to pray for you. And I will teach you the way that is good and right. But be sure to fear the Lord and serve him faithfully with your heart. Consider the great things he has done for you. So here at the end of this part two of the story, this first betrayal, we see the acknowledgement of the brokenness, and we see this utter disappointment that Samuel's experiencing. But then I think we get a glimpse of restoration. Like the fact that he comes back in the end of this farewell speech on the eve of Saul's ascendance to, no, I'm still with you. I'm still going to be here. And it's, to me, he's doing that when he reminds them about what God has done for them and when they see. There's some way in which he's beginning to depend, I think, on God's faithfulness where his is faltering. That's kind of the way I see him kind of getting back into the game here. And so he's able to help Saul in and actually build a relationship with Saul. They seem to become quite close through leaning on God's faithfulness. Samuel knows that God's love for God's people is deeper and longer than his own. And that is what restores Samuel to them and able to go on despite that brokenness. So we get a kind of first crack here, and then things are repaired. And then it gets worse. Saul ascends, right? He becomes king. And, you know, we start off okay, but sure enough, Saul as a king does just what Yahweh and Samuel feared. The situation where things really come to a head is that Saul gets his really first instruction as a divinely ordained king, which is to go and eliminate the Amalekites. They're a people we don't know a lot about. What we know to be the case here is that they were a nation that preyed on Israel. As soon as Israel made it out of slavery into the desert, the Amalekites pounced on them and raided them severely. We don't know a lot about the Amalekites' evils, but we hear mothers listed as their main victims, and we know that they preyed on the weak. And Saul is instructed to go and eliminate them in an act of divine judgment. And what he does in that case, as some of you know, is that instead of following God's orders, he takes some of the spoils from this. He takes the livestock for himself. And he lies about it. He tries to pass it off as, oh, I was taking those for the temple, not for me. So Saul establishes a broken relationship with God on behalf of Israel for this. And what's worse, or maybe just as bad, is that he spares the king of the Amalekites. So not only does Saul not follow through on the instructions, but tries to keep things in his hand. He tries to keep the livestock for himself. He lets the king of this evil nation live, which to me adds to the horror of the killing of the nation. I mean, was not the king the one who ordered them into these awful acts, and yet he was spared? It's hard not to read this as Saul, newly in power, identifying more with another leader in power than with the people he serves, right? Or than with the orders he serves and with the God he serves. And it's interesting to get that this week in the lectionary. So Saul really falls just exactly to the failure that God and Samuel warned Israel about. That a king whose authority is based on rule over property is just going to get more property. A king as an institution based around selflessness is only going to become more selfish. And what's more, Saul lies about it to Samuel. And once he's eventually caught in that failure, Saul begs Samuel for forgiveness, and Samuel does not forgive. It's a heartbreaking and very cinematic kind of scene here where Samuel physically turns away from Saul to move away, and Saul grabs his cloak and tears off a piece. It's such a gripping picture of this broken relationship. Earlier, we heard a story of Saul and Samuel essentially up on the roof all night before he became king. I mean, you can kind of see them. Samuel softened to this idea that he gets a relationship with Saul, and this betrayal, there's an utter brokenness. And that's where we come in to today's passage, that Samuel left for Ramah, for his home. But Saul went back to his home, and until the day Samuel died, they did not see each other again, and Samuel mourned for him, and God had regret. I get a picture here of Samuel leaving Saul, but leaving Israel as well. So I'm just going to go home, right? I'm so broken by this relationship, and I feel like you've failed me, Israel. I'm going to go back where I came from. So what can we learn from this? What can we learn about how we can love with God's heart when disappointment is this great? How can we love as God loves? With sadness and regret, but also with that unwavering commitment, that Eden-like faithfulness. And this is where we go in the end. The Lord came in the very next verse to Samuel. The Lord said to Samuel, "How long will you mourn for Saul, since I have rejected him as king over Israel? Fill your horn with oil and be on your way. I'm sending you to Jesse of Bethlehem. I have chosen one of his sons to be king." So the Lord is asking Samuel to move on. Don't you hate it when people ask you to move on, when a relationship is broken? That feels so dismissive, right? I'm still here in this. This feels deep to me. I can't move on from this. What am I supposed to do? I have run out. You know, when they asked for a king, it broke it. I got back in, Samuel's saying. This is too much. This is done. They broke it. I can't do this. And God is not Pollyanna about this. God has regret. And God seems to be able to hold in the same hand regret and love and commitment in a way that is really something. I don't know. There may be some country songs that do it out there, but I don't know where. There's not many places where that all gets together as powerfully as it does in this story. And Samuel struggles. He's got love in his hand, but he's too challenged. He can't get around it. And I think what's significant this time is that God is there to help him with this. That God's command for Samuel to move out is not just a command to get over it. It's interesting that what happens next, and I won't put the scripture up here, it's not just that he goes and finds the young boy David, who will be king. He goes and God instructs him to go and sacrifice a bull, and that will be how Jesse will find you. That will be how David's father will find you. And to me, that's a way of saying, what is the sacrifice of a bull? But back to that law, right? Back to that monument to God's love, back to the monument of God's abundance. And it's as if God says, "I know you got nothing in you to do this, but if you go out and go through the motions that I have given you, it will come back in your body. Your heart's not there. Your body needs to get in it. Get out there, get back in that order that I laid out for you, and it will come back." To me, and why will that come back? Because the bull sacrifice is about God's commitment to Israel. It's a reminder to Samuel, my love doesn't fail. My faithfulness is great. It keeps him going. And so there's something there where where our heart can't go because of hurt. Like maybe our body can at least assume that posture of love, and God leads us there. It's almost like a kind of blood transfusion in a way of like, I don't have it, but I can use God's love through me will help me keep moving forward and help this restoration happen. And so there's restoration here because Samuel can depend on God's love where he's got none left. And of course, the beautiful thing about that too, that the Bible doesn't say as much about, is that if Samuel had not depended on God's love to restore his own relationship to Israel, he would have lost his relationship to God as well, because that brokenness that he experienced with Israel would have been so present with him that it probably would have torn and broken this other thing too. So God helping Samuel restore his relationship to Israel is also God holding Samuel there. So this is what God offers in God's love for us. I mean, this is a church where I think we are right to constantly remind ourselves of how faithful God is to us and how God's love just comes to us as this ever-present, everlasting gift. But there's something here, too, about how God's love for others plays just as big of a role as God's love for ourselves. We can tap into that. It carries us. It extends us. And so the other part of the lectionary here from Ezekiel connects to this. This is where we'll end. This is what the sovereign Lord says, as the prophet Ezekiel wrote later. I myself will take a shoot from the very top of a cedar and plant it. I will break off a tender sprig from its topmost shoots and plant it on a high and lofty mountain. On the mountain heights of Israel, I will plant it. It will produce branches and bear fruit and become a splendid cedar. Birds of every kind will nest there. They will find shelter in the shade of its branches. All the trees of the forest will know that I, the Lord, bring down the tall tree and make the low tree grow tall. I dry up the green tree and make the dry tree flourish. I, the Lord, have spoken, and I will do it. And I read a verse like this, and I'm all in on this from the bringing the high low. That is a order that is resonant throughout the Bible. It's one of the orders that speaks to me politically, ethically. But in light of the rest of the story today in the lectionary, I also see this as a testament to God's faithfulness and love for God's people as what keeps the growth going. This is not just tearing down the high because they're high. It's tearing down the high because there's a commitment to the low out of love. And the love is the thing that keeps the growth, keeps the green going in the dry time. And so as we go to communion today, where we always remember God's faithful love to us, maybe I would invite you to think about where we can lean into God's love, where our love is at its limit. And that seems to be where this story takes me. Where can God's love for those that I am struggling to love because there's so much brokenness come and fill me? Where can I lean on that, as Samuel had to lean on God to keep that relationship restored with Israel? So I'll invite you all to join us at the tables here at New Covenant. All are welcome to come to the table and remember the source of that love in Jesus, who gave his life for us and rose again to keep this order manifest and alive. Amen.